This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by the Manhattan Comedy School. I'll be teaching a six-week podcasting class starting October 29th. It's a six-week course, 3 hours a week, so that's a total of 18 hours of instruction. And guess what? I'm having guest speakers come in and tell you about their own podcasting journey, like Lori Kilmartin, Adam Ferreira, David Feldman, Alonzo Bowden, and Jackie Cation. So head over to ManhattanComedySchool.com or my own website, ChristineBlackburn.com, for more information. I'd love to see you guys there. Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian and comedy writer Steph Zamorano talks about being a public school teacher for 20 years and drugs.
The kid comes back and he goes, "Miss Zamorano, Miss Zamorano." I'm like, "What's up?" He goes, "They got the drug dogs on campus." All of a sudden, the assistant principal walks in to my classroom and he goes, "The principal wants to see you." I'm like, "Okay." And she goes, "You know, Steph, you know, everything is fine. I've been in a situation before where you have to, you know, break some bad news to somebody. And, but it's not like that at all. Let me go ahead and have the sheriff explain it to you."
Today on the show, comedian and comedy writer Steph Zamorano talks about teaching in the public school system and drugs. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Steph Zamorano, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 10 years, or you're a brand new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys had a chance to listen to Jeff Harry last week. Jeff Harry was a very interesting guy. He founded this company called Rediscover Your Play, which basically teaches people how to play. So, like, he found me on this service called Podmatch, where you can kind of find guests and you can pitch yourself as a guest. And I got like 30 people want to be on the show, and I was not interested in anybody. Not that they're not great, wonderful people, but my show is sort of specific. But then when I saw this guy's, you know, his bio and stuff, it was just so damn interesting teaching people to play. Mm-hmm. This guy, Jeff Harry, literally made himself a company based on playing. And he goes around to these big companies and he gives these, you know, keynote speeches about playing to like Amazon and Google. And it's really cool. He's a neat guy. So go back, listen to Jeff Harry, you guys. His story is about rejection and it actually gets pretty intense. But go back, listen, you're going to love it. But not today. Not today, because today I'm here with Steph Zamorano. Hello. And I miss you, Steph. I miss you so much. This COVID just blows.
It blows. It's the new normal, not able to see people. And I've been thinking about you and, you know, because we would hang out at Flappers and we would do ladies night on Thursday nights. And Wendy Wilkins was there, you know, it was just fun to see different people. Kimberly Clark. And I just really loved all the energy of the room and the women that ran the room. They were just so funny.
Yeah, they really were. And also, that's a really nice stage. You know, it's big. It's like 200 people could fit in the room. So it gives you, you know, it's not just some shitty open mic in the corner of the bar, you know? But why do you think it was so special? Do you think it was because of, you know, all women?
I guess so. I guess there's a certain sensibility that happens in the room. Oh my God. I don't know if you were in the room that one night, some woman came and she said everything raw that you could say that was really politically incorrect. She was like doing material. Like if you were that, anything you said in the 80s that you can't say now, she was saying full throttle, and the room, everybody just sat there kind of like, holy shit.
Stunned, right.
It was so funny how she was so into being raw. And it's this style that doesn't necessarily speak to me. Plenty of style in the world. Everybody has their unique point of view. But it was one of the most stunning experiences that somebody didn't read the room or their style wasn't, I don't know, it's simpatico, but that you were there.
No, I wasn't there, but I got to Flappers that night, like at 7:30, because I was actually doing a set in the Yoo-Hoo okay. room at 8. I hate that. I hate that name, Yoo-Hoo room. What is that? That could not be a worse name. But the point is, we're all hanging at the bar, and the girl that hosted that night, and I can't remember her name. It wasn't Nora. It was the blonde girl, real pretty.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She was there, and she told me all about it. She was still, like, in shock.
They didn't know what to say.
The woman had got on stage, and usually everybody is very
supportive,
accepting and supportive. Nobody's jealous. It's not catty. But this woman, I guess, went on, like you're saying, and just started pushing buttons, but being really, like, racist.
It was, I mean, like, you know, the word retard, let me just say that. That was, like, just the nicest thing she had to say.
Yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to say retard any longer. That's not what anybody's supposed to say. Don't say it.
So then what happened? Then the host eventually, she had to go on stage. She had to get her off,
no,
right?
No, she did her set. The room went cold, right? Everybody's kind of sitting there. And everybody's like stunned that it was so just in your face. You know, I don't know, like Andrew Dice Clay, like now, like that kind of feeling, like it just doesn't work.
So then what? No,
nobody said anything.
But I thought that the host ended up going up and saying, okay, that's your time. And then she freaked out like, I paid my $5 and I can say anything I want.
I don't remember that part. Maybe I was too aghast. The young woman that I saw, she ended up just like grabbing her jacket and left as she was done. You know, usually people hang out because that's the fun part. You've gotten all jazzed up to get that, you know, 5-minute set, you know. And sometimes we're lucky that it was a 7-10-minute set, you know. So
yeah, sure.
That was a fun night.
There are some crazy things that happen, that's for sure. But for the most part, it's usually just comics are keeping their head down, doing their set, working on things. But, you know, and people take it seriously, but there's still a lightness in the room because it's fucking comedy.
Yes.
And so that was so crazy that lady just lost it.
It's great. You know, but comedy's great. It's just like, you know, talking about play. That's playing. You know, that's the part of comedy. You know, you get to go play. You get to be like, you know, to think that you have something to say on stage that people would be interested in. It's just such it's a grown-up playground.
It really is. And no matter how old the comic is, they're always still with it to an extent. You know what I mean? Like Tom Dreesen is now 80 or whatever, but he's still like a dude because he's hanging out in clubs. He's heard it all. Like you don't have to put any guards up talking to these guys.
Well, I think comedy is ageless.
I like that.
You know, like there's, I think, you know, my husband does comedy and, you know, we talk about like, oh, you know, are you ever going to get out of lockstep with culture, society? And then like your ideas don't resonate any longer. How does that happen? But, you know, the whole idea that comedy is such this, what do you want to talk about? What's important to you? You know, it can be social commentary, you know, really everything you're doing is social commentary, ultimately.
Right. It's your narrative. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is like when you always hear comedians, you know, and you say, well, what is your point of view? Why are you telling us what you're telling us? Why is this important? Mm-hmm. Right. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, they get a take the most mundane thing and make it the most important. And we all can see why that's funny. But it's just a craft, you know, people who are present on stage. Like I would marvel at these young women doing comedy and they were so poised and had
confidence
and they were really crafting their content. And, you know, and it's hard in LA to craft your content because you're getting really short sets everywhere. Unless you're established and you get longer sets, you know. But now the Zoom thing is a very different forum.
Landscape altogether. Yeah, it's a whole different thing. But wait a minute. So you're saying that when you were these girls' ages, like 23, 24, 25, you didn't have this confidence that you have now?
I did sketch comedy. So it's like a whole different genre. So I did the Groundling Sunday Company. And so like I was really into character stuff. Oh, I mean, like right now, look, I'm wearing cat ears because it's
she is,
you know, and I'm like, oh, my mom just gave me these fuzzy little leopard cat ears and I'm wearing them. And so like, I loved getting in costumes and, you know, taking on personalities and like wearing like, you know, sketch comedy was so fun because you're working as a group.
Right. But that's different than stand-up, and
then,
of course.
Yeah. And then stand-up is a whole nother.
You know my show, Story Smash, right? Yes. Story Smash, the storytelling game show. The idea being that you spin a wheel, tell a true one-minute story on anything you land.
Yes.
Well, I had a regular gig here in Hollywood at the Improv Olympic, the one that was on Hollywood and Western. Yeah. It's shut down since then. But I did Story Smash there for one full year, about twice a month or whatever. But you know what? It did not work. Do you know why it didn't work?
Why?
Because the kids that were taking improv classes, they didn't know how to land on a subject and then just start talking about it honestly. You had to give them a storyline or an accent. Like they couldn't. They were just.
I need a location.
Yeah.
And a foreign accent.
And what do they call it when you wobble or you're not steady? I need a disability. Anyway, so these kids were able, actually, they weren't good for Story Smash. It was so funny. So then I went back to comics, and now it's really all comics to play because comics can be truthful and they can talk about their own lives. But I think it's very different.
Sketch comedians, they'd like to do a lot of space work.
Right. They love space work. They love.
I did. Oh, let me open this cupboard. Oh, what's in here? Oh, look. Mm.
Yeah. I did one session with the Groundlings and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But then, you know, you have to get put on to the next level. And I didn't.
Well, how it works is each level, they'll have a teacher that will come and substitute that class. And what that teacher is doing, too, is giving another evaluation of the student's skills. And through that evaluation, they then confer and then they go, okay, you know what, take the course again or blah, 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 blah. And then you either take the course again or you go to the next level. And then the next level, second level is like more improv. The third level is writing and improv. And then the fourth level is two showcases.
Yeah.
And then each level you are either said, thanks, continue, or thanks, move on.
And each level, you know, until you move on, each level is about $400, but you could take level one 3 times and level two 4 times. And then when it's time to get to the Sunday Company, they say goodbye. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough. That's a tough road. But my point is that I just saying it's a different medium.
Oh my God, it is. Totally different.
Yeah. And you've been doing comedy for so long. And of course, you're on.
I think I'd be better at it.
No, you're so great.
Really, you would think I'd.
Well, but you didn't start comedy at 25 because you were a teacher for 20 years. So when did the stand-up start?
Oh, well, when I started to do stand-up is when I started to date my husband.
I see.
And so I was in a master's program getting a degree in multicultural education. And I would still do sketch comedy and I would still go and perform and living two lives, you know, like a lot of artists. I needed stability and I wanted to be able to have money to pay rent. And so when I started to date Jimmy, he said, you know, you kind of talk like a comic. And I'm like, really? What do you mean? And he just said, you know, just the way you say things. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so he challenged me to do it. And I said, okay, as soon as I finish my master's, I'll go do a set. And of course, you know, I did it. And it's just a different playground. It's just very, you know, like I get really, I get nervous. I get excited. I get unfocused. I can't remember things. I need a lot of practice, you know, like most, you know, like anything to wear your material and tell it naturally and be able to find those nuances in it. You know, you really need to be present. And that room on Thursday nights allowed me to be present.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That is so interesting. And everybody really did love you. I mean, everybody paid attention to you and you're kind of a specific kind of comic. Everybody has their own thing, but you always had a really good slant and you had so many great political opinions and stuff that were really intelligent and definitely over the level of most of the people in the room. But I was always with you. I heard all of your stuff. You're so funny.
Well, what am I, one of my favorite things was we work with a guy named Mike McCrae, and Mike McCrae is this wonderful impressionist. He's amazing. He could do Barack Obama, Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Mitt Romney. He could do everybody. He's fantastic. And he does Al Pacino. And sometimes he'll call into the show and he'll be Al Pacino and he'll say my name, Steph. And I'm like, oh, I love it. Oh, so Jimmy and I are crazy for impressionists. And so every so often, I was doing my Elizabeth Warren. I would do with Elizabeth Warren. I would do a bad Bernie Sanders. I would do my Pete Buttigieg.
So fun.
And I would just do these things because those were just playful to me.
Yeah.
You know, but they were also, I tried to say something. You know, whatever.
And you always did, but you committed to the character. And that's the funny, because it's like your view of the character. It doesn't matter if it's spot on. It's just hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, you can't. I don't have it here. Shoot. I thought, I like to do my impression of Kamala Harris. And right now, every time you see Kamala, she has the mask. I mean, I'm wearing a mask right now, but I actually look more like Kamala Harris now when I wear the mask. All right, look, this is look.
She is easy on the eyes.
Go. Look, there we go.
Yeah, you do look like Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
She's easy on the eyes. Am I right?
Well, certainly compared to who? I mean,
she's just a really pretty woman. I'm just saying, she's beautiful.
You know, Mike Pence with a fly in his hair.
That was awesome. Kamala and I are the same age. So there you go.
Oh, 38?
That's exactly right. See?
Oh, she's so young. She's
I know,
so
it's beautiful. Today, you bring forth the topic, don't do drugs. And I remember growing up in the 80s, that was the big thing. You know, it was Nancy Reagan. It was don't do drugs in the early 80s. And at my high school, they had this coalition of parents called the chemical people that would follow troubled kids. And then, you know, to see what you catch you smoking pot or whatever. I was caught twice in high school smoking pot. And they also caught me going into an R-rated movie. And these people were crazy. They were like totally zealots.
They're watching you on your own personal time if you went to an R-rated movie?
Yeah. They had these parents that were like zealots. It was really crazy. But I definitely smoked a lot of marijuana. I'm going to go starting at 14, but 15 is where it kicked in. Oh. And then that was it for a long time. Well, and alcohol, right? Because when I was a kid, I don't know about you, but like we would go to my friend Kimberly's house, and her older brothers had like Stroh's beer in the basement. It was warm. It was so gross. But we would drink a can of that. We weren't like drinking, but you know what I mean? We would want to see, oh, are we going to get a buzz or something, you know? But it was so gross. It was disgusting. And then the other alcoholic drink we would do, we'd all get in a car. Somebody got their license, we'd get in the car and drink. That's what you did. Or you'd drive to a parking lot and stop the car and drink. And we would drink that malt duck.
Whoa, malt what?
You know that malt duck? It's like so foul. It would be like a Bartles and James or like, you know, I forget what they call those beverages, but it's just foul. Oh, like a malt beverage. It's called a malt beverage. Anyway, just disgusting. So, I mean, I wasn't like drinking, just what we had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What were you doing in high school?
Oh, I was having sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured, you know, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke pot. But I, you know, I was having great sex.
And what grade were you in? And what grade was the person in?
Oh. Well, I was a junior in high school, ripe age of 16, a junior, and my boyfriend, he was a sophomore.
That's so hot.
But he looked like a man.
Oh, wow. Did he have like a beard?
Bobby O, when he was a freshman, he was on the varsity basketball team. Freshman varsity basketball team.
Wow.
6'2".
Wow.
He was Italian and Irish. And we were together for like 6 years. Thank God. Or I would have been a real slut and whored around more.
Yeah. So. Are you guys friends on Facebook?
Oh, no. I can't find him.
Too bad. I see a lot of friends on Facebook from high school. And it is just a wow. I don't know what to say. It's so wild.
one of my friends, you know Todd Glass, right?
Yeah, of course.
So when we used to do comedy and everything else, a podcast together, and he at one point went to his reunion. I'm going to say maybe 25. I don't know. Let's say 25. He looked in and he goes, "Who's all the old people?"
Yep. You can't even believe it. It's like, what happened here? Was there some sort of hydrogen bomb that went off?
I went to my reunion, and I grew up in Orange County, believe it or not. And when I went to my reunion, I was like, I had no idea there were cowboys in our school. So a couple guys came up as, you know, they like showed up in their cowboy gear.
Wow, that's funny.
That's in Fullerton. I don't know.
Oh, in Fullerton, California.
No, they're right here, Belinda, so maybe they have their horses and everything there.
Yeah, because there are a lot of ranches and stuff here.
It just seems so bizarre. Fullerton, California. Cowboys are showing up to the reunion.
Okay, we're going to get to your story in a second, but let me ask you something. Growing up in California, first of all, you're the one.
I'm the native Californian.
You're the one in the room. Yeah. Was anything about it like, because it was my era too, I think, in the 80s and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Was there anything fast and wild about it? Because, like, I'm growing up in Pittsburgh and I thought everybody out here was on Knott's Landing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just thought everything must have been so perfect here, you know, like Dallas, when we would see that show Dallas, or we'd see that show, you know, Knott's Landing, Falcon's Crest. And that's what Los Angeles seemed to be like to me. You know, like, I couldn't get over Venice to look at those things on TV. You know, the Pasadena, I remember the Rose Parade being just blowing my mind. Like, how can that weather be like that?
Yes, yes. Every time there's the Rose Parade, the weather looks fantastic. And people go, I should move there. No, yeah. Stop moving to California. So was it all like Knott's Landing and Dynasty and Dallas like that?
I know it wasn't, but like high school and stuff. Did you feel ahead of the curve? Because this is before the internet, and this is before, like, it seemed like California got the best clothes first or the newest fashions, the latest whatever, and then it would trickle to the East Coast. Hmm. Or maybe New York was doing stuff too. But the point is, in Pittsburgh, we weren't having any of that. You know what I mean?
You know what? It's so nice that you would have that impression. First, I want to tell your audience that I did, in fact, meet Joan Van Ark from Knott's Landing. Did meet her. She is as tiny as can be. And yeah. Had a beautiful home when I went in Studio City. She threw up a bridal shower for a friend of a friend or whatever that I went to. And I'm like, oh, here we go. But as far as, you know, being on the.
That's such a California moment, by the way.
Oh, right.
That you would just say that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also I went to a shower with Joan Van Ark.
I mean, that's so funny. Later in my life, I met Sonny Bono. So I guess you're right. Life here in California was very Knott's Landing, Dallas. No. I grew up poor. So whatever fashion I got from a store named Gemco. And that's like a Walmart kind of. So like
I see.
The fashion's there. Really, I leaned towards overalls growing up. So that was really my signature piece.
And Fullerton isn't really Los Angeles. No. I mean, it's...
No, they like to say it's behind the orange curtain.
Right. But the orange curtain can be deceptive because when I think of Orange County, I think of money, 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 money. You know, I just think of Huntington Beach and Newport and all those stunning places. And so you're saying there's two sides to Orange County.
What I would say is... We were on the poor side where everybody else was doing quite well. And so, like, like we came from very modest background. And the people, you know, some people at our school lived in the hills. And they had, you know, nice homes, big homes, palatial estates. They had, what are they called? You know when you have like a little a dolly in your house, not a dolly, a dumbwaiter.
Oh,
they have dumbwaiters in their home. I'm like, you have a dumbwaiter? What is this?
Did you ever try to climb in it? That seems so logical.
I think other kids did. I tried to be more mature.
How is your sister, by the way? Because I met your sister. She was on the show once.
My sister, is this wonderful writer. She wrote this beautiful book, The Amato Women, and it's just a lovely story of a family, and it gives the Latino experience. And she continues to write, and she gets published frequently in like short story collections. She has a wonderful character, Inez León, who is a detective. And the woman is based in Pasadena. So when you read these stories, you know, it's like, oh my God, she really pays a lot of attention to California landmarks. It's really fun. So she's also a professor at Occidental and Long Beach. So she's a very busy woman.
Wow. She's so bright. Real quick, let's pitch her. Does she have a website or something?
Oh, I think it's, let me look. I think it's Desiree.com, but I'll have to look. Isn't that funny? She's on Facebook. And yeah. Twitter. She's La Desiree. She's actually La Desiree on Twitter.
La Desiree on Twitter. I like that. La Desiree. And her last name is Zamorano also, of course.
Yes, it is. We kept the same last names.
So anyway, back to high school and doing drugs. I've told my audience this before, but I, you know, it's just weed and some alcohol. But then when I was about 19, 20, the cocaine came in because it was the mid 80s. But I got over it really quick. I mean, it was there for two years doing cocaine, spending all my tips from the weekend. I would waitress, all my tips would go right to blow. And it was so stupid. But I had a pivotal moment, an epiphany. And that was, I was living in Colorado at the time, and we had gone down to Denver for something. And, you know, at that point, I was way up in the mountains. And when you go down to Denver, you know, it's like a big deal, you know, like, what do you need? You need anything in Denver? You know, because they didn't have anything in the tiny town I lived in. So anyway, we went to Denver. And I remember in a window downtown Denver in the 16th Street Mall, seeing a VCR, and it was like $279. Very expensive, really. Wow. But I remember looking at it and thinking to myself, okay, wait a minute. If I didn't do that blow the last three weekends, I could have that. Shit. Oh. And that's it. And then I stopped doing it. Like it was like a financial thing when I saw it so clearly. Like the VCR was such a big deal, such a big deal at the time. I quit drugs. So that was good. I mean, you know, so I got that going for me.
Wow. So it's like technology was able to turn you off from cocaine.
Yeah, it still turns me on. Not cocaine, technology.
Well, you know, I did not do cocaine. I am not.
Ever?
That's amazing. When I was growing up, I don't know if you ever caught those Linda Blair films. There was a film with Linda Blair when she was in high school and she got addicted to drugs and it was just a nightmare. And I'm like, oh, I bought the propaganda completely. I was totally propagandized not to do drugs or anything, but it didn't keep me away from sex.
That is so funny.
And the reason why I say that about sex is I want every woman out there who had sex as a young woman to start telling all these other young women that you've had sex as a young woman and that that's a part and that's natural. Ladies, it's natural to have that inclination to want to have great sex. And imagine that, you know, just use protection, kids.
I totally agree. And not for my daughter, of course, not my daughter, but I hear what you're saying. wait, I wanted to ask you one more thing. So wait a minute. You're telling me you never even tried cocaine?
No, not interested.
Wow. Good on you. Good on you, because it really is a lot of fun. But it's not, obviously it's not worth it. The best part about cocaine was talking about going to get it. That's the best part of it. Because then once you get it and once you're on it, it's over. It's over because you just, it's horrible. You can't talk for days. It's such a lie. I remember there was also an ad in the 80s when they finally came around to saying, don't do cocaine. There was one line in the whole commercial. It was like just black and white images. And then it said, cocaine is a lie. And I remember being like 22 and I was like, yeah, it is, man. I know it. You know, like it really hit me. Like, yeah. It is a lie. God damn it. So anyway.
It's a lie.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I know. Anyway, that did it for me. So that's good. But I'm anxious to hear your story. Don't do drugs. I know that you were a teacher, so I'm pretty sure it's going to have to do about your school, something in school.
Perhaps.
All right, you guys, before we get to Steph's story, I did want to remind you to check out storyworthypodcast.com. You know, storyworthypodcast.com gives you the information every single week on who's going to be on the Storyworthy Hour of Power. Steph, do you know my new show, The Storyworthy Hour of Power?
The Storyworthy Hour of Power? Tell me more about this.
What is this power you speak of?
Oh, my. Story Hour of Power.
Well, I started it back in, I started it, the first one was May 17th, and I'm on show 23. And yeah, it's great. And four people come on the show and tell true stories. So it's basically five of us telling 10-minute stories. And then after the hour is over, we play Story Smash, my game show with Blanka Patch and Danny Zucker.
Yes, you have to come.
I'll throw out dates to you. It's damn funny. So every Sunday night during this pandemic, you guys, I'm entertaining you starting at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And again, head over to storyworthypodcast.com. You can get tickets there. And you know, there's always a free option. I'm a giver. You know that, Steph.
I know you are.
Also, find me over there on Twitter at Storyworthy. And then check out my YouTube channel, which has all of the Storyworthy Hour of Powers on it. Not Story Smash, but the Hour of Power. They're all up on YouTube under Christine Blackburn 1. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel because this is getting, it's really sad. I just started doing YouTube, so it's not sad, but 73 subscribers. Come on, you guys, kick it up a notch. Subscribe to my YouTube channel.
We're going to get to 75.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of really funny commercials on there as well that I put together, and it's super funny. So lots happening over there on YouTube. But right now, let's get over to our guest, Steph Zamorano. As you heard, she's a comedian and an activist, and you're an all-around awesome person, Steph. You're best known for your work as one of the writers on the hugely popular Jimmy Dore show on YouTube. Speaking of which, you guys have like 855,000 subscribers. Did you know that?
Oh, wow.
I looked at it this morning. Yeah, this is your husband's show, the Jimmy Dore show. It's so popular and it's so hot. And he just, you guys both do a great job. I know you tour with it as well before the pandemic. And it's just fascinating because you guys often have a different point of view than other people. And it's really an education to listen and to watch the Jimmy Dore show. There's a podcast as well. Right. And then the YouTube show. So it's a lot of fun. And you, like we just said, you've been an educator and you have over 20 years of experience, which is a lot of teaching. And I'm anxious to hear about it. I also know that you're known in small circles. I like that term, by the way, in small circles. I call it now the bubble because, you know, like me and my ex-husband and my daughter, you know, we have to, there has to be a bubble going on. So we have a chart, you know, and it's like, okay, I've seen these two people. And my ex will be like, okay, I've seen these three people. And then there's also two other families involved. So there's like probably 15 of us. And that is our bubble. Do you guys have a bubble?
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably less than that.
Well, ours is only because of the kids. And I don't see those people.
Exactly.
It's just when our children play. Like she got invited to a birthday party on Halloween night. And it's a sleepover. We are not allowing her to sleep over, even though it's in our bubble. It's just a little too much. Everybody breathing in one room. And you know, kids, they sleep like in a pile. And so we're not, that's not happening. But the rest of the party, it's outside. And so she'll stay from like 5 to 9. And again, those are the kids in the bubble. So, God damn, I wish we didn't have to think about all this, but obviously we do. And now
the new normal.
That's right. Now in your small circles, you're known as the miserable liberal.
Yes.
And in that vein, you can find her. You can find Steph over on Twitter at Miserable Lib. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Steph Zamorano.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you so much. So I've been a teacher for over 20 years. And my friend Dave, you know, he asked me, do I miss teaching? No. Nope, I don't miss it. I would teach Monday through Friday over 180 teenagers. You don't want to be in a car with two of them. And so Monday through Friday, 180 teenagers of anywhere from 30 kids in a classroom to 39 kids in a classroom, sometimes 42 kids in a classroom. And I don't know if you know the psychology, you know, of how people work, but anywhere from one to 10 sociopaths I would be coming in contact with daily, or 8 to 15 psychopaths. And that's not even including the administrators. That's a fun one. And so like, I don't think after that time period that I had the emotional bandwidth to deal with everything. You have to deal with so much in the classroom with kids. And so I was one day, I was in the middle of one of my lessons. I was teaching a very powerful lesson, very powerful instructional moment. And a kid raised his hand. He comes over to me, goes, Ms. Zamorano, Ms. Morano, can I go to the restroom?
I said, okay, let me give you a pass. Let me write down your name. There's a lot of information here. Okay, go to the restroom. I go back to my class and I'm teaching them. The kid comes back and he goes,
Ms. Morano, Ms. Morano.
I'm like, what's up?
He goes, they got the drug dogs on campus right now. And they just walked in next door and they took a kid out and they arrested him. I'm like, ooh. Hope that kid did his homework.
All right, have a seat. Keeping it light, keeping it light. I mean, I just want everybody to keep, you know, think about this right now, that they have dogs patrolling classrooms, looking for drugs or, you know, even cigarettes or alcohol, going into classrooms during a school day while we're supposed to be teaching. Okay, back to the story. So, by the end of the class period, I have the kids working on an assignment, and all of a sudden, the assistant principal walks in to my classroom, and he goes,
Ms. Morano, Ms. Morano, the principal wants to see you.
I'm like, okay. Now, I didn't think that was weird, because I am a union rep. And so as a union rep, as I love my union, you know, the United States used to have to 33% of Americans were union members. Now it's dwindled to 11%. And you got the nurses and the teachers, one of the strongest national unions. So I'm like, oh, I'm a proud union member. So I go to the principal's office and I go up a couple stairs and I was like, oh, I'm kind of out of breath. I got to remember to exercise more. Right. And I get into her office and I sit down and the principal's seated right across from me and I'm kind of out of breath. And I go, is everything okay? And she goes, you know, Steph, you know, everything is fine. I've been in a situation before where you have to, you know, break some bad news to somebody. And, but it's not like that at all. Let me go ahead and have the sheriff explain it to you. And I notice that the sheriff is seated beside me. I don't know if you know what a sheriff is. He wears a badge and has a gun in his holster. And I notice there's another man to my left. And he's the size of a refrigerator that makes ice cubes, right? That's how big he is, right? And I'm sitting beside both of them. And the sheriff says, well, Ms. Morano, yes, you're aware that we've been conducting searches today on campus with our drug dog. And I'm like, mm-hmm, yes. And he says, and as we were doing this search, we had our dog patrol the teacher's parking lot. I go, mm-hmm. And our dog sat beside a vehicle and we ran the plates. And the vehicle is registered to you. And the dog sat beside your vehicle. And I'm like, well, that is a very well-trained dog. What does it mean that the dog sits beside my vehicle? Okay. And he goes, well, it could mean a couple things, Ms. Morano. It could mean that you have drugs in the vehicle. There's some paraphernalia, pharmaceuticals, maybe ammunition, artillery, a gun, perhaps alcohol, maybe just prescription drugs. But what we'd like to do right now, Ms. Morano, is we'd like to go, and he stands up, and he says, I know we'd like to go and search your vehicle at this time. And I said, is this because I'm Mexican? I'm kidding. I didn't really say that. I wish I had, because I think they would all shit their pants if I'd said that.
I wish you had too.
Right. It would have been so great. Instead, I said, well, I'd like to go back to my classroom and teach. And the reason why I was able to say that was because I was trained at the Groundlings and I have improvisational experience. I want to go to your car right now and investigate your vehicle to see if it has any paraphernalia. Now, what happened was that I remembered at that moment, I didn't drive my car that day. I was driving my husband's car.
It was Jimmy's car.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what's in his car. I don't know what's in his car. Right? So I sit there and they go, oh, okay, well, you don't want to go now? Oh, well, then the big refrigerator man, he turns to me and says, well, then why don't we do it at 3 p.m.? And I'm thinking to myself, oh, yeah, let's do it at 3 p.m. when all the kids are out of school. I'm walking with the sheriff, the principal, the refrigerator, and my car. Nobody's going to notice. Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see here, folks. And I turn to them and I go, well, I'd like to go back to my classroom, and I'm not available at 3 o'clock because at that point I'll be evaluating student work, responding to parent emails, and evaluating data and synthesizing it. Synthesizing data. Yeah. That was my favorite part, right? That's all the buzzwords as a teacher. They want you to, I'm going to synthesize the data. Really, just your kid just should do their work. That's really the data there, okay? Your kid isn't turning in their work. Turn in your work. So they stand up and they go, all right, what time can we meet? I go, well, maybe about 3:30, 3:45. It is 2 p.m. at this time. And I go, oh, all right. And the bell rings for the next class. And I go, all right, I'll see you about 3:30, 3:45. I go back to my classroom. I pick up my phone. I call my union president. And I go, we have a problem here, stat. He goes, don't worry about it. I'll have the union member in your room and our law advisor. We'll come to your classroom at 3 p.m. And I go, great. My students are walking in the classroom. I get them ready on assignment. I call my next number. I'm calling my husband, who does comedy professionally, which means I need to talk to him a little differently than maybe you would talk to your spouse. So I picked up the phone and I dialed it and I go, hey, honey, it's your wife. The police at school want to search our vehicle. I am not joking. And he says at this point, don't let them. I'm like, what? Don't let them. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Okay. Don't let them. Nice. Right. Exactly. Don't let them. Fuck them. Why would I let them search my car? So then he goes, and I never thought I would like to hear this, but he said to me, don't worry, honey. I'm going to come and steal the car. I am married to a bad boy. So I have a lesson. I'm working with the kids. We're reading Fahrenheit 451. We're talking about censorship. We're talking about all this. I'm like, oh my God, trying to have an engaging conversation. What's the most important amendment to you students? And they write about it, first freedom of speech, So long story short, 3 o'clock rolls by. The union president comes into my classroom. The legal advisor and the union rep and the union president are now in my classroom, and they're advising me what to do and what to say and how to do it. And what we all conclude is Ms. Amorano is going to go back to the office and not say anything. Okay. They don't want me to say anything. I'm like, done. I like it. I don't have to say anything. You say it. So we go back. Three people are now with me. Three people are now with me. We sit down. The sheriff goes and explains everything that's happening and adds a new detail and says, well, just so you know, Ms., when we were doing the inspection, we were walking in the parking lot and we were told that there's been drugs being hidden in the bushes. My car in the middle of the lot, surrounded by cement, not by a bush where blah, blah, drugs are going to be, blah, blah, right? I'm a teacher. I'm not high. I'm not drunk. I'm not smoking. I'm not snorting. I'm teaching powerful lessons and I love it. And they're a drug dog? What the? In America? Why do you need that? So we go back. We go in the office, the sheriff says something like that, and then my legal advisor said, well, Ms. Almorano has no problem complying with you searching her vehicle with her lawyer present. At which point the sheriff said, well, as far as we're concerned, this matter is closed. With my lawyer present, you may search my vehicle. With my lawyer present, everybody, if you want to remember a phrase for the rest of your life, and by the way, they can't search your vehicle, people. And, okay, I know somebody's going to say it's on public school. It wasn't public school lot that day. There was another reason. Long story short, I'm dazed and confused from what just happened. And I walk out. I thank my friends for their support. I walk out to my car and it's gone.
Jimmy took it.
I walk a little bit down the street. I hear a car screeching. A door, passenger door flies open. My husband says, hop in. I got in a shotgun seat. We go home and I had a little bit of pot to take the edge off of my day.
No doubt about it. That is so crazy. So did he take your car over to the lot?
He parked his car away, walked up, and he goes, Steph, there was nobody around your car. I go, I know. It was baloney.
So funny.
And he stole the car. And what's really funny is he knew a little bit about pot law and everything like that, because he did with the marijuana logs with Doug Benson, Tony Kameen, and Arch Barker. Jimmy would fill in when they did it in New York, and they had met, and we had actually a pot lawyer business card in Jimmy's wallet that as Jimmy's driving to steal the car, he's calling and talking to the guy, and the guy goes, don't let them look in your vehicle, you know.
So they need a search warrant for the vehicle, yes?
Yes, they need a search warrant for everything. Yeah. They can't go through your backpack, you know, on the street if they think it's suspicious. They can't do any of that stuff. So, you know, my point is, kids, don't do drugs. Just wait until you're old enough to get away with it.
Hey, wait. You say dogs can smell for guns? Yeah. I didn't know that. What are they smelling?
So, well, that's what they told me. I'm only taking the word of a policeman, you know, so... But don't they do that all the time? Don't they, you know, sniff for drugs and sniff for they? I think they can. Listen, let's ask your people and the people that answer this question. Please text me.
Well, when I was a flight attendant, especially in Miami, they would let these drug dogs go in the overhead compartments. They were usually like yellow labs, and we would you know the DEA person or whoever would lift them up into the overhead compartment, and they were really cute. They'd scramble all the way down the airplane through the overhead compartment, and it'd scramble all the way back looking for drugs. And then they go down the aisle in all the rows, you know. It was very specific, but that made sense in Miami at that time. And where your car wasn't even in the school lot?
So they were doing construction on the campus. So my regular parking spot was where they had construction happening. So we had to park catty corner in a Baptist church parking lot.
Oh, geez.
So students could park there, teachers could park there for that time period. So that's not school property. Right. There's no flipping reason that they should be doing that. It was ridiculous. Taking drug dogs through the teacher's parking lot, otherwise, it's just nonsense. It's like you're not solving a problem. If these kids are, in fact, doing drugs, there's something else going on with that kid. And arresting them and humiliating them in the classroom is gross. It's not the way you should conduct public education. And if you think they're doing that just at, you know, in middle, you know, this is at La Crescenta. This is at Crescenta Valley
High
School.
That's a good area, isn't it?
A really wonderful, beautiful area, but it is not necessarily an area. You have a very mixed socioeconomic population.
As is a lot of Los Angeles.
Yes. So anyways, it's just, you know, poverty is the issue, not drugs.
Yeah.
And you're going to solve the problems of the society inside the classroom. God, you know what? Maybe my classroom shouldn't have had 38 kids in it.
Yeah, to begin with.
That's my problem, you know? And why do I need a man with a gun on my campus?
And so who, what happened to that other kid that was pulled out of the classroom next to you? Was that a drug thing?
It was, you know, he probably, he could have had cigarettes in his thing and they could have suspended him. And for what?
Yeah.
For baloney. What baloney, you know?
Did you, were you teaching at the time where you had to go through security to enter the school?
No.
That's really prevalent now.
No.
I mean, was before the pandemic, you know, going through metal detectors and stuff, entering the school.
Yeah. That's trying to pretend you're solving some sort of problem. And if there's violence on that campus, maybe there's violence in the homes and there's violence on the street and the violence in the neighborhood. And it's a reaction to poverty. And
yeah, it's the whole community issue, of course.
You know, how can you in Flint, Michigan, you know, these poor kids in Flint, Michigan, who have been poisoned by lead, they are now will have permanent brain damage. And it will now affect them throughout their life because of this damage. And the consequences of that will be that the kids won't be doing well academically for the rest of their lives. And, you know, the schools get funded when you have great test scores. The schools lose funding when you have bad test scores, because bad test scores reflect bad teaching. Or do bad test scores reflect what's wrong with your society and culture?
Yeah.
So... that's my happy note. Kids, don't do drugs, especially during a pandemic, kids. Steer clear.
You and Jimmy never had children. Did you ever consider that?
I was barren. It's not a big deal. Don't take it seriously. I'm okay. You know?
Yeah, but you don't have to be able to have children to be a parent.
Well, I know I'm a parent to my dog. But I think what happened when we started to date, in our relationship, Jimmy had a bone disease and almost died.
Wow.
So it changed our life for 5 years, if not longer.
Holy cow. I didn't know that. You know, Jimmy was on Storyworthy telling a really funny story about thinking that he had.
Yes.
He thought, he was convinced that he had colon cancer or pancreatic, yes, or something very seriously, uh-huh, because his urine was red. You know, really red. And that was such a great story. It was really scary, you know, because he went out and took a walk on his own thinking about how he was going to tell you, Steph, you know, that he's dying, you know, because everything is red in the toilet. And he goes on, and it's a really long story, and it's really interesting. But the upshot is that he had eaten beets. That is so funny. Anyway, I think beets are gross anyway, but that was a fabulous story.
It's a great story. It is a great story. Jimmy Dore, hilarious. And he thought he was going to die. And he actually felt released at that point. He was like, okay, all right. I think I can live with it.
That's mm-hmm. hilarious. He accepted mm-hmm. it. Yeah, he accepted. And so during this pandemic, of course, Jimmy still has the show on YouTube.
Oh, thank God.
Pretty big deal, obviously, because he's got so many subscribers and it's very professional. Is this in your house?
It's in our garage.
Yeah, great.
So I, you know, we have this garage. I'm in it right now, and it's we put cameras up. You know, we just did. Jimmy did a lot of research, and my job was to empty everything from this garage, ugh, and we took everything out, and I, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, we put these square little carpets in.
Yep.
I got some black fabric that I put against the wall to absorb more sound. We have sound things all over this room. And then slowly but surely, we started from one camera to two cameras to three cameras. And then we have, and nobody's in studio except Jimmy and me, because our editor and our other executive producer, they work remotely.
Yeah.
So because of the pandemic, they're able to literally we use Black Magic, which is our editing machine. And the guy can switch from my camera to Jimmy's camera
remotely.
We can do Zoom calls. We can do Skype. I mean, it's crazy.
Impressed. That's a lot of ingenuity to come up with all that. I thought you were going to say that you had all three cameras running at once and then somebody was cutting. That's so nice, man.
They use Black Magic and they can do it all remote.
I'm going to write that down. That's really interesting. I did sort of the same.
Here.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Beautiful. You've got a lot of space. How wonderful. I love your space. It's really large. Now, I started, you know, because when I started the story where the Hour of Power, I started with two tiny lights and now I have five lights. I mean, it's just lighting me. It shouldn't be so hard. But I have curtains on the walls that are red. And then I ordered black flats. You just get straight black flats on Amazon and they were like maybe $12 each. So I have a really cool.
That's nothing. Well. That's a great price.
And then you know what else I did is last weekend I built my own sandbags to weigh down the lights.
Yeah.
Went to the beach, got a bunch of sand. Look, I'll show you one of them. Look how nice. See that?
That's awesome.
I sewed the end and then I put like a one of my old belts there.
Yes.
So I made my own sandbags. It's really kind of fun.
That is great.
Yeah, it's just trying to be creative and doing new things. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've really stayed in touch with, you know, a lot of people over the summer, whether it's Zoom or social media. But I miss going to the improv. I miss going to Flappers. I miss performing in real space. I miss like an audience, obviously.
I don't know how I don't know. This is going to go on for another year. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
So I don't know how those places are going to survive, but I do know drive-in comedy is happening.
Yeah.
I believe Flappers is doing some drive-in comedy shows and people are figuring out, you know, like in California, it's the weirdest thing. In California, you have some of the best weather, but you have a lot of outdoor seating. There's patio seating at places. Now, with the advent of the pandemic, and people in cities are changing the rules about letting you put tables out on the sidewalk. I mean, you're seeing the transformation of restaurants going, okay, well, we got to be outside. And you're seeing a lot of them know how to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, people are doing what they have to do. I also agree. I think it'll be at least until about next September or October when it cools down again next year. Yeah, it's not going away anytime soon. There's no way.
Yeah.
There's too many people in our country don't even believe it. I mean, there's no other country that's like this.
You know, I go like this. I'm like, listen, I'm not, you know, when I go and walk my dog, I don't want to wear a mask. I don't. I'm going to walk my dog. I don't want to wear a mask. Don't walk by me. But out of respect for anybody else in the universe, I keep a mask with me.
You put it on, of course.
If I see them at the corner that we might, I put it on, but I always cross the street. I don't, you know, but I think if anything, to make the stand, I'm not going to wear a mask doesn't make sense to me, you know, but how I proceed is I don't trust your, you know, when you say I've self-quarantined, okay, your idea of self-quarantining and my idea of self-quarantining yes. are different. So I'm just going to know that I'm going to just continue to keep 6 feet. You know, apart, even from my husband, I can't no more than 6 feet with Jimmy and me.
No, but they do say 6 feet if you're both wearing masks. If one person is not, then you should be like 12 feet apart. I mean, it's a whole, yeah. Oh man. Oh man. I don't know. It's just such a surprise. Everything has been such a surprise and so unprecedented. It seems like, you know, when 9/11 happened and people would say like, you could write a movie and you wouldn't believe this concept. And that's what this feels like. Like you could tell me that this was going to happen and I wouldn't believe you. I wouldn't believe that so many people are so stupid that they can't follow a very simple rule. And I'm just saying like if seatbelts help, right? And we're all required to wear seatbelts. Why can't there just be a mandate? Wear your fucking mask. What's the big deal? I don't understand why. I mean, that's what other countries have done.
Well, I'm going to double down. I'm going to double down on this and I'm going to go, guess what, Gavin Newsom? We are the fifth largest economy in the world. California is the fifth largest economy in the world. He did support the nurses that wanted to give health care to people in California. But for some reason, a Democratic state, Democratic governor, Democratic Senate can't get me health care. You can give me health care. You can give me health care in the state of California. So, Gavin Newsom, you have a dream one day to become president of the United States. Why don't you start here in the state of California, fifth largest economy in the world, dude, and give us health care?
Yeah.
Because they can. The states can give us health care.
Yeah. Interesting. I actually never thought of it that way. I was thinking more of the federal mandate, you know?
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Gavin Newsom has the nicest hair in the politics?
Oh, besides Pence?
How about Mike Pence is 6 years older than me? What? It's like he's it's like he's 99. He's so old. He's so feeble. And he's like 61.
Wow. Wow. Anyway,
all right. Listen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. You cracked me up, and I'm glad we're staying connected. That makes me really happy.
Yes. Yes. I say we don't wait to do another show, that we'll try to Zoom together and chat more often, because that would be really cool.
That would be fun. I would love that. It really would be. That'd be fun. Hey, listen, I will definitely have you on the Storyworthy Hour of Power. It's been a blast. I'd love Jimmy to come on as well. I'll email you more about it. We would love that.
You got it.
One more time, you guys, on behalf of Steph Zamorano, head over to Twitter, tell her that you liked her story, and that's at Miserable Lib. Miserable Lib over on Twitter. Follow her there anyway, because she's damn funny. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of Steph Zamorano, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.